You're listening to the official podcast of Asbury University, produced by students with God-honoring conversations that inform, edify, and encourage. This is Asbury. We explore culture and current topics through a Christian worldview, promoting a well-balanced life, and we empower our community to belong, become, and be set apart. I'm your host, Abby Laub. Welcome to This is Asbury. I'm joined in the studio with some special guest alumni, and I want to let you guys introduce yourselves, the Nassfells. Go ahead and kick us off, Andrea. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Andrea Nassfell. I am an alum of Asbury from our media communications program. Brady and I met here and lived in LA for 25 years. I was a screenwriter out there writing feature films and also teaching. And so now we're back. We're back in Kentucky, and I'm teaching full-time here in the media program and English, teaching screenwriting classes and also some creative writing.
So when did you guys graduate from Asbury?
I graduated in 95.
Okay.
93.
Okay, nice. And so you, shortly after, moved to the West Coast, or what was your path out to LA and then back? How'd that pathway go?
I had always intended to go back out there. I grew up in Nevada, so from the West.
Yeah.
And I worked for Asbury for a couple of years while Andrea was finishing.
Oh, yeah.
And then we thought we would leave then, but then it was clear we needed to stay here for a bit. Mm-hmm. And we ended up being here a total of, I was here for 10 years, including school.
Great.
And then in January of 2000 is when we moved to L.A.
All right. Mm-hmm. Great. So what was it like coming back after all those years? Was it the same or did it feel really different?
I think it felt different. The town has certainly changed and grown. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of changes at Asbury, but we've been very active. I was on the alumni board for a little while, and my parents are here, so we're back a lot.
Yeah.
And so we've seen things kind of grow and change here. Obviously, the media program has grown and changed a lot. This building is not – we were in Corbett Hall, you know.
Yes.
And so this is a beautiful building, definite exciting upgrade for the program.
Right. And you had a couple kids in that time as well. Do you want to talk about them?
We did. We have a daughter who is 22. She's living in LA still. Mm-hmm. And then we have a son who is a freshman.
Yeah. Are they following your all's career path, or are they doing something? Did they say, no, we've seen that. We've had enough.
We didn't ever intentionally, you know, do that to inspire them or something, but they both ended up being in the arts and in the entertainment. So
Emma's acting and does some production work with Brady even on the side, and then Justin's studying music.
So they saw what you did and they liked it and decided to do that too. That's encouraging as a parent, right? You're like, because sometimes you see the opposite. Sometimes kids are like, I want nothing to do with that, right? So that's cool that the apple fell close to the tree.
They
like
weren't
that.
Deterred by the ups and downs.
Right? Exactly.
They definitely saw
the feast or famine as an artist, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Kentucky Film Incentive, Brady, and the new initiatives towards film in this area. Really, can you explain to people what that is? Because I know that you can get a break on essentially on your taxes. Is that for payroll taxes? Can you talk about what that entails?
The best way to describe it is that when you spend a certain amount of money in the state, you get a rebate at a percentage that they
offer. I think it's 35%, right?
It can be. It ranges from 30 to 35% depending on what the expense is. Mm. And there are some things that are not qualified, you know, above certain amounts of pay for a lead actor, that kind of thing. But it's a big, big help for a filmmaker, so that if I'm budgeting a film and financing, raising money for the movie, I can count on, in this case, probably a net of about 20 to 25% coming back, depending on how much I spend in the state.
Yeah.
And that's a significant amount. That's leaves that's 75% of the movie that has to be funded at that point. So it's a big deal. And in Georgia, if anybody is aware of the business at all, that Georgia has a ton of films being shot there, and that's because of their incentives.
Yeah.
And if you don't have incentives in a state like that, you're not likely to have films shooting unless there's a very specific, you know, location or you know, for Kentucky, that's been a horse movie or something like that. Horse movies will shoot here.
Yeah.
But outside of that, that doesn't happen. And the incentive has been quite successful. They I think it's at $75 million that they put into the program each year. And I believe last year they maxed it out.
Okay. Well, I think it's the incentive, and then also it's just cheaper to do things here. Does that also play into this?
Yes, it does. It does to some degree. And the challenges you have with a state like Kentucky that's newer in the industry is that there's not a significant crew base here.
Yeah, the workforce.
So then you have to bring people in as the industry is getting up and running. People get more and more trained.
Right.
So that will catch up as long as the film incentive continues to operate.
It creates good opportunities for our students because they're looking for jobs. They are here.
So. Yeah, and that's how we have already taken advantage of that. We brought a film here almost 2 years ago now.
Mr. Manhattan.
Yeah. Mr. Manhattan.
I loved it. That was such a fun movie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we enjoyed making it here. It was quite gratifying. We had no idea we would be moving here at the time, but you know, bringing a film project here, and we believe we had 20 students involved in that film.
At least, and then alumni as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it brings a lot of opportunities having an incentive like that. And Asbury is positioned in a way that almost no one, probably no one, is because of this student population, the strength of the program here in MediaCom, and the facilities, especially the sound stages, are equal to anything in LA, really.
You guys built like an entire apartment in our soundstage.
Exactly.
That was really cool. Yes. I got to tour that one day when y'all were filming. I don't know where you guys were filming that day. So I know that summer films, they're a huge thing for students. Oftentimes, you know, not every summer, but many summers, there'll be some kind of film project, whether it's an Asbury film or a film like yours, Mr. Manhattan. So when you were filming Mr. Manhattan in the area, you said you hadn't talked about moving back yet. Did that influence your decision at all?
You know, you know, it's interesting. I definitely had a sense of what it would be like if we moved back. I also, coming back to the Lexington area, was impressed by the feeling of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's quite a great city. It's just like it's got a really great feeling.
It does.
It.
It's very walkable, bikeable.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that the filmmakers that we brought here, I think they enjoyed being here.
That's true.
Enjoyed the city quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that you can just get out to the country in like, you know, 5 minutes. That's wonderful. Cool. Well, we loved Mr. Manhattan. And now you have another film you have just completed or it's coming out soon in March. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
A friend of mine, last January, came to me and said, "Hey, we need to finish this film. We're almost done." A great friend of mine, and we got involved with it, and it ended up being a lot of work to complete the film. We ended up shooting a lot more content. It's a documentary, so it's not the kind of project where you have a script. It's you're discovering the story as you go,
right?
And it, you know, was fairly challenging to kind of wrangle that one. Documentaries can be that way because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
someone should say something and it changes the whole film.
It really does. And, you know, I think we had a new subject. There were three different people we're following in the film. And the third one we didn't even know about when we started. So, you know, you discover someone new and you're like, wow, this is an incredible story.
Yeah.
And it really does tell the journey of these people who are all hurting or sick or challenged in some way, and they come to this tent revival meeting in Colorado that's run by Mario Murillo and his ministries, and they have an encounter there. And however you feel about miraculous work in the world, what you see in this documentary is the change in these people. The transformation is just incredible.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so palatable about that. It's incredible to see someone go from, in the case of one of the characters, like near, she wanted to go through assisted suicide, however you say that properly. And she was that depressed and down and sick. And then you see her at the end, and it's a different person altogether. So,
that's so cool.
It's incredible. And it's coming out in theaters in March, March 9th, 10th, and 12th are the dates. It's kind of a limited release.
Yeah.
The title is I Am Living Proof.
Well, that's why you have your wife. She's like,
exactly.
Tell them what the film is called.
Yeah, exactly.
So they know what to see. Well, I love, you know, films like this, it's cool because, and, you know, I'm not an expert, but sometimes you'll see, it's going to start with a limited release, and you're kind of expecting it to be small, and sometimes it is, but then sometimes also, which is like, takes off. Like, you see that sometimes in the industry.
It's true.
So is that, you know, deep down, do you kind of think, gosh, I really hope that God can use this and it just takes off?
Every filmmaker hopes that.
Of course.
I would say in this particular case, yes, I would like to see that happen. But mm-hmm. I think more than that, the transformative experience of these people is mm-hmm. what I hope people see and it connects with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that can help other people feel hope.
Yeah.
And I think
absolutely.
That's what I hope to see.
Yeah.
Can I brag on it for a second?
Go ahead.
So they
go
just
ahead.
had a premiere this past week in Colorado.
Oh, cool.
And the subjects themselves were surprised at how good the documentary was. That was part of it. But more importantly, there were people there that were saved as a result mm-hmm. of seeing the movie. And I mean, Brady even said, you know, after he wasn't able to go, but after he got word back about how it went, it was like, well, that was it. Like, that was enough.
That was the whole reason
to see the movie. It's already
totally.
A success.
Yeah.
So hopefully that reaction is what the movie receives going
forward. And that's rare. Most movies don't really radically change someone's life. I mean, we all like our movies and, you know, whatever. But this one has the potential to really change people's lives.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit more. I'm just curious about, you know, moving back. And it's kind of cliche to be like, what's it like to be a Christian in film? But just how has that been, like, on a really personal level? Have you had to sort of carve out your own path? I mean, what did that look like on the ground? Because I know we have students who want to do that, and they want to make an impact, and they want to be different. What is it like to be different? You did it for 25 years. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think it's been interesting because things have changed so much in mm-hmm. the last few years. So I think back to maybe the first 20 years that we were out there, things operated generally the same way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were married, balancing having kids and all that. So you make a lot of choices of what you're going to do.
Even that alone is significant.
Yeah. Yes.
Truly.
Yes.
I bet you saw a lot of relationship turmoil among your peers, if I had to guess or no.
Well, it's just a lot of, like, how are you going to make choices?
Yes.
Are you going to be on this TV show that's going to keep you away from your family for 18 hours a day? And, you know, those are the kind of choices that we were navigating.
Yeah.
And still we're able to, you know, find opportunities and make movies in a lane where we were able to do the things we felt we should priority-wise.
Well, I mean, one distinct moment I can remember is when Emma was just born. Mm-hmm. I was up for an assistant to a producer, a significant
big
producer, and I would have been in Australia for like 6 months.
Oh, gosh.
It would have been a huge movie.
Yeah.
And in the conversation, it just became more and more clear, like, this is just going to be unbearable. I'm going to miss the first 6 months of my daughter's life.
Mm.
And we decided not to pursue that further. Mm. So, you know, those kind of decisions get made. And I think there are other times where I wondered, you know, why are things not happening in a certain way? And I realized later that they would have also taken me out of the family equation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much for any person to get weakened and beaten down. And, you know, then – and we saw this with some families where they end up being broken families at that point because they just didn't put their relationships first.
Yeah.
So that's something to really guard against, I think, for any person in the industry, whoever you are.
I think that the main thing about being a Christian in an environment like that is that it is so up and down. Everything is gig-based, so you're not, you know, employed for any length of time, or while you are employed, you're still looking for your next job because things last 6 weeks, a few months, you know. And so I think in the course of those ups and downs, I don't know how people navigate that without God.
You know,
I feel like that was always creating a real dependence on him in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And while it was frustrating sometimes and you're like, God, why can't this just be more stable? It definitely created an environment where we were constantly having to trust and ask. And it forces you to walk closely with the Lord. And I think that that's an advantage that people in a comfortable position don't have.
Absolutely.
So I would say it just an overarching lesson that learned, you know, or I just don't know how people do it without God. I don't know how they make sense of it.
Right.
Because there are many things that happen and you can kind of understand, oh, God was like like that job, or, you know, God was guiding us in a particular way so that we would end up over here, which we never would have done if we had chosen ourselves. And this is such a blessing over here. So all of those things are true. And I think that's been true about moving back as well. Mm-hmm. Like the last 5 years have been very strange with COVID, mm-hmm. and then the strikes. And now the fires, there's just been so many things about living in LA and working in the industry that have been difficult and have been rapidly changing yeah. the way the industry works. And one of the advantages of that, especially COVID started this, but people scattered. They moved all across the country. And so it's not as necessary to be right on location. I don't think I've had a meeting in person in years. Even when I was in LA, they would still do the meetings on Zoom because then you didn't have to get in traffic. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes it easy for me to still, I can keep writing. Yeah. Brady can produce from anywhere. He just flies in. He was flying someplace else to make the thing anyway. And so now he's just flying from Lexington instead of LAX, which is a much nicer airport.
Much more enjoyable experience.
Well, and I'm closer to a lot of things. There's a project I'm working on coming up soon that's in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I can drive there in 3.5 hours. So there are some advantages.
Kentucky
there.
Is in a day's drive of 2/3 of the population. Fun fact for your day. So it is easier logistically to get around. Yeah. Did people think you were off your rocker when you were like, we're moving to Kentucky?
No.
No.
Honestly, when I shared it with a number of people, I was like, well, it looks like we're probably going to be taking a turn here.
Maybe they were jealous.
They were. They were like, you go for it, man. I wish I could be leaving. And I really had quite a few people say that.
Yeah. I mean, cost of living, for one thing. But then when we explain, like, so our son is a freshman, not here at Asbury, but at Lipscomb. Uh-huh. He wants to be in Nashville for music. Yeah. And, of course, as mentioned, that's just a short drive away. Mm-hmm. My parents are here. Mm. And so it's just, it makes sense to be close to family and to be where it's a little more cost effective to live.
Yeah. Well, and you've said a couple times, and I've heard so many people say this, the industry is changing. It's changing. What does that mean? I mean, obviously COVID like literally closed things down. So did people just start making pivots at that point and then it never went back? Or what do you mean by that?
Well, it came back. The business came back pretty strong after COVID kind of opened up because there was they needed a lot more content that didn't get produced, right? And then the strikes happened, and all of this is corresponding to the streaming wars, you know, with all these streamers. And that meant those companies were spending way too much money to compete with each other.
Right.
And so once the strike happened, usually when you have a strike, when you come out of the strike, especially this almost six, it was about 6 months, you have a huge resurgence. In this case, that didn't happen. And it's just because the studios and all those companies involved were dialing back the spending and being much more focused. So that's one of the big changes. It's just not as much business is happening, not as much production. And then you have new technologies, you have AI, you have a lot of those factors that are going to be more and more in play. So, you know, thinking about LA, you know, there's always this discussion when you're a filmmaker or you're a film student, like, do I need to be in LA? The answer definitely is no, but there are a lot of advantages to it, too, because that's still where all the major decision makers live in. Like a large percentage of, you know, A-list talent and the relationships that you form when you're there. And, you know,
if you're in television at all, you're in a room, you're
exactly.
in a physical place more often.
Yeah. So there's a reason to be there, and for someone to be called there, that's a good thing to follow if that's what you're being called to do. And Southern California is a beautiful place to live. There's reason why that many people live there. We loved living there, and it was a hard thing for me to contemplate, but there's advantages to wherever you live.
Yeah.
And I think, again, being where you're meant to be is a key thing.
Did you go to the beach a lot?
We did.
There's a lot of traffic between us and the beach, but yes, we did.
I would say not a lot, but we did take advantage of that.
We had certain traditions. Yeah. We went to the beach every Thanksgiving. We had a restaurant at the beach that we would go to on Thanksgiving. Yeah. That was our unusual Thanksgiving tradition, but only in California could that be your Thanksgiving tradition.
Right. I have friends that do that every Christmas. They go to the beach every Christmas. Oh, that's so great. I love the beach. That's a good advantage to living in LA. There's a few you know, lakes around here, but they're certainly not the beach. Well, you mentioned something, Brady, about AI. You know, I know for a while there it was like everybody was terrified, and probably rightly so, and maybe some still are. But I have heard that chatter. That chatter has died down just a little bit from the time when, like, ChatGPT came out. It was like, what? You know, but I know, obviously, this is still a real concern. Can you talk about that a little bit, where that's at and how it's evolved in the last year?
Yeah, I don't think anyone has a really good sense of how radical of a change is going to be coming. I mean, I think it's coming much faster, and it's going to be more significant than we can maybe fathom. We're also getting a little bit used to it. Like you said, we're not as worried about it. And so I would say I'm still in a state, personally, of great concern.
Yeah.
I think and hope, maybe it's more of a hope, that human-made products will have their value and their uniqueness. And we'll see how that plays out.
But, well, like the documentary you just made. Yeah. I mean, you can't make that without humans.
That's true.
Point?
And I mean, documentaries, I actually haven't really talked too much about that. And I think you're right. You can't tell a true story with true people without those people being in it. Right.
When we were on strike, one of my friends had her strike sign said, human stories need human writers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's always going to be true. I think I'm very concerned about it as a writer because it is one of the things that people think, oh, we'll just have AI write
just
that.
Just write the script.
It was a big part of our issues during the strike. But and I'm trying to talk to students a lot about that now as well. But I do think that humans bring something special to it that AI can't create. I think that AI created things are going to feel kind of like the junk food of the entertainment world, and there'll be quality entertainment that connects to us on a human level, made by humans. And so the question is, will that first wave of everyone wanting to try, you know, I can put myself in a movie or whatever, wanting to try all those sort of gimmicky things, what will that do to the industry and to people who make their living by, you know.
Or maybe the novelty will wear off and they're like, this is keeping me from being creative and I don't like that, you know.
Right.
It's just going to have to grapple with the cost savings that it could present or, you know, does more.
I think a lot of crew is going to be in danger as far as like set design, things like that, that people will go to artificially made things. But I feel like viewers can sense it. Like they feel it when they watch it. They know it's not real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially in the early days, there are probably going to be some pretty awful, you know, movies that come out that are AI generated or, you know, content of various types. And then, of course, we know it's learning. So it'll get better and better.
And I keep telling my students, don't teach it. Don't feed the monster. Don't give it prompts. Don't give it ideas.
That's right. But we can't help ourselves.
Ask it to make a grocery list for you, but don't ask it to write stories.
Yes. Well, that is a good question then. Is there anything that is useful that you have found that's, you know,
so research?
AI.
Yeah, research. I don't use it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. But, I mean, it's embedded in everything now. If you Google search, it will
give
you AI
results. Whether
you're
using it or not, you're using it.
Yeah,
you might not
absolutely.
Even realize it. Yeah. It is. I know that Professor Maneri here, the journalism professor, has very strong feelings about it. He's very against it. And he's like, it's just going to make journalism even lazier than it already is becoming, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oof.
I think, too, that when we talk about it, there's different types. There's AI that can help you with things, with tasks and things like that. And then there's generative AI, which I think when we're talking about it, we're always talking about generative.
Oh, absolutely.
AI.
Well, and the influence that it can have, if you think that social media had an effect on society. Imagine essentially social media that's intelligent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, and that's where it is heading to some degree, that creating false, like, AI profile.
Well, shifting gears, you know, you mentioned teaching and you don't use this with your students. What has it been like teaching? And can you talk about that a little bit, your role here at Asbury?
It's been great. So I was teaching for Asbury for 9 years before we came here as an adjunct in our graduate program. So that's all online. So I was able to do that from LA. And I was teaching feature screenwriting. And then I also was teaching in person at USC in their graduate program, teaching a very similar course, another feature writing course. And I enjoyed that. It was interesting. I started right after COVID. A lot of the professors at USC retired during COVID. I'm out. So they were hiring people coming back after that. And it was really nice to be in the classroom. Being online is helpful because I had students all over the world, China, Africa, all over the place. And but they're, you know, they're 2 inches big in a little screen on your desktop. And it's not the same as being in person. So but being full time and being with undergrads has all been new to me this semester or the last semester. And it's great. It's just a lot of fun to meet students that are finding their way, you know. And one of the classes I teach is writing for media with Prof. Maneri. Actually, it's half journalism, half narratives writing. And so it's been very fun to kind of find those students that they have to take this if they're a media comm major, but to say, hey, do you know that you're a writer? And to kind of encourage them in that way. And it's been the same with my creative writing. I'm teaching some fiction classes for English, and just to find those students and like see them light up when they realize that they, you know, they love telling stories or that they are good at crafting them. That part has been a lot of fun for me, and then to be able to be a part of that journey for them. So I very much enjoyed having an office and, you know, having colleagues in person. It's a pleasure to be at Asbury, too, just a place where I feel obviously very much at home because I'm from here, but also just because the heart here amongst the professors and the students resonates with my heart for what I hope for them, for their lives, for their work, all of that.
Yeah. Well, and you guys are parents to kids who are in this demographic. So just in closing, what would you tell other parents who have kids in this phase of life who are creative, who want to get into this really dynamic industry? What kind of advice or encouragement would you give them?
Well, we've been talking about this recently, because it's difficult for parents when they see that an industry might be difficult. And when you don't support what their giftings are and what their callings are, it's sad to us when we see that, which, it, you know, it doesn't happen as much these days, I don't think. I think parents are more, you know, within our communities, more supportive. I think supporting their giftings and really what they think they are feeling called to do is so critical. Despite the fact that you might have to, you know, endure watching them have hard times. I mean, that's the thing, you know, and I think that's good for any person, right? We have to forge our own paths.
Yes.
And if we don't face those challenges and difficulties, we won't grow and get stronger. So I think that's what I would say.
Yeah, and I think that we were talking in a class yesterday about creativity just in general, and the creative arts are really what we turn to when COVID happened. Did you watch a lot of movies? Did you read books? Did you listen to music? And how would you have coped if you didn't have those things? And so while some people think you should get a business degree, you should get this something more practical, there are times when the creative arts are essential to human flourishing, and we need to be training our next generation in that way. We talk about, you know, the verse in the Bible. It talks about Jesus speaking in parables, and it was to fill prophecy, and that prophecy comes from Psalms, and that Psalm talks about how I will tell the stories to the next generation. And so it's commanded in the Bible. It's modeled by Jesus that we're passing these stories and arts on to our to the next generation, and for many reasons, to, you know, to tell of the wonderful works of the Lord, right, is part of it. And so that, you know, that's why I love a place like Asbury, because we're developing them as artists, but we're also developing them as spiritual beings, as followers of Christ, and following His example in that way. So I think that training students in the creative arts is essential to human flourishing, even though it can be a struggle for your pocketbook. That's really, in the grand scheme of life, not what God's asking us to do. Right. So I'm privileged to be here and excited. I'm excited to see my kids going into that area as they pursue gifts that they have, and excited to see your kids, if you send them here, flourishing as well.
I want to take one of your classes. I don't know.
I know she's pretty convincing.
Right? So I'm like, let's go. Let's do this. Oh, I love that. So, Brady, your schedule, you're kind of traveling. You're, you know, holding down the home front. What does the next chapter look like for you?
Well, I've been working a lot on developing new projects mm-hmm. in the narrative space primarily, mm-hmm. meaning, you know, not so much documentaries and live events, but more in the feature film and television mm-hmm. areas, and have some good prospects and things happening yeah. there. So hopefully there's something to announce
yeah.
soon.
Yay.
And vice versa.
That's fun. Well, you guys are awesome. Thank you again for your time. I appreciate you coming in, and I can't wait for people to hear this. Thank you again. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of This is Asbury. To learn more about Asbury University, visit asbury.edu.